buckle your seatbelt. It's time for another episode of the Prepper Recon Podcast. I've personally been buying gold and silver from JM Bullion for over 2 years. They offer the best prices over spot that I can find, and I've never had a problem with an order. If you're looking to trade in some of your fiat paper for real money, check out jmbullion.com today.
Ready-Made Resources is a trusted name in the prepper community because they've been around for 18 years. They offer great prices on night vision, water filtration, long-term storage food, solar energy components, and provide free technical service. Get ready for an uncertain future at readymaderesources.com.
Hey, Preppers and Patriots. This is the second half of my interview with Matt from Omega Survival Supply in Dayton, Ohio. Enjoy the show. Obviously, you need stuff to survive, but perhaps just as important, or perhaps even more important, is skills. So besides stuff, you offer classes at Omega as well, is that right?
Yeah, that's right, and I wish I could do more and more often, but it's just the time thing, like with everything. So now we might be up to 15 classes or so, different things that we offer, and I have kind of a few of them I do myself. Most of them, the majority, though, are by people that I've met that I find to be high-quality individuals, and they come in and talk about their area of specialty and do a class for us. Things like lock picking, which, the one thing, Mark, about this community, and it's kind of like, it's not as bad as ham radio. There's some sanctimonious people in ham radio, if you don't mind me saying so. A lot of cool people. A lot of sanctimonious people, too, where they know the way. They're constantly trying to compare, you know, who's the smartest or who's got the best theory or whatever. And I think, I don't know what you found, but I found that there's a little bit of that in this community. But I really enjoy more open source learning and, you know, open source idea sharing and just different theories and what works for you. That might be great, but don't tell me that's the only way and that I'm a fool for doing it the other way if the other way works for me. So lockpicking, one of the classes I was starting to mention. Well, I don't need lockpicking. I'll just kick the door in. Yeah, well, you know, then you can't. Number one, you're announcing your presence to everybody in the neighborhood. And I'm talking Mad Max type scenario here where you have to scavenge for things. Well, you can quietly open the door and secure the door behind you once you get in. Whereas if you just blast it open like Rambo, you're announcing your presence to the whole area, and you can't secure the door. So lockpicking, I think, is a valid skill for anybody to have. Really, I use my lockpicking skills a couple of times a year. If I lock myself out or somebody locks themselves out, it's legal here in Ohio. I don't know about Florida. So lockpicking, I got a class on small-scale solar systems coming up. Just had food canning not too long ago, hot bath and pressure canning. So, yeah, we do a few classes.
At one of your classes, real quick on the lock picking, you never, as we're becoming more and more viewed as being enemies of the state, just if you have more than 3 days worth of food in your pantry, or if you're your political views don't line up with Chairman Mao's, we're getting closer and closer to the day where lock picking might be useful to get yourself out of a political prison.
Well, let's hope not.
Let's hope not. But hey, why not know how to do it just in case?
It comes in handy. And under normal circumstances, even. So, yeah, lock picking. What else do we do? We got fire making 101, and we do some rudimentary rifle breakdown and cleaning. And, we got a few. You can check that out on the website if anybody's interested.
And one of the classes you offer is on solar generators. Is that right?
Yep. Yep, I've got a small four-battery system at home, and again, this is one of those things you can talk to five people and probably get five different answers, so I'm not claiming to be the end-all, be-all expert, as usual, but I have my ways, and my ways have worked for me. I like golf cart batteries. They just make a little more sense to me. They're sealed batteries, so you don't have to worry about the hydrogen venting when they're being charged, just like with the marine batteries you'll hear a lot of people recommend for solar systems. That's fine if that's what you want to do. I've just been around golf carts a little bit, and I know they're set up for heavy discharge and heavy reuse. and I've had real good luck with the golf cart batteries. But I've got a little four battery system at home, pretty simple. So yeah, it's that kind of thing that we kind of like to demystify for people a little bit. It took me probably 4 years before I finally said, you know what, I'm just going to order this stuff that I think I need. It's going to be staring me in the face, and I'm going to have to do it because solar can be kind of an intimidating thing, but it's really not that complex, especially if you're doing a small-scale system.
Yeah, I started out real small and kept building, and, you know, I've been through different charge controllers and gotten a better charge controller, and I've gotten, you know, I'm probably on my third or fourth inverter. You know, I keep kind of upgrading, and you can do that with solar. And you know, I've still got the same two panels. I added a lot more panels, but I've still got the same two panels that I started with. And, you know, I've still got a lot of the same cables and stuff. And I've still got all those older components, too. And, you know, a couple of them are wrapped up in tinfoil in an ammo box. And, you know, in case everything else gets fried, I can always go back to them and something's better than nothing. And now, do you sell solar components at Omega, or do you sell complete generators or both?
Not too many, really. Goal Zero is a brand that's kind of a plug-and-play brand that I've found to be of good quality and very user-friendly, and a lot of interchangeable components you can use with different things that they sell. But that's kind of a plug-and-play. You don't want to mess with it yourself. So far as the homemade solar systems, I do carry a couple of inverters. Don't have any charge controllers, don't have any batteries, don't have any standalone panels. That's something that I just like to do as a service. I have a little one battery system set up here with the roof panel in the office that I like to just kind of show people, like I said, and demystify how simple solar can be. But I would plug one company that I don't get any money from, by the way. I just think they're a good small business called Northern Arizona Wind and Sun. So if anybody wants to look them up, they're a really good source. They're very helpful, and they will sell you all of the solar components you need.
Very good. And you've got a class on canning. I suppose that's pretty popular around the fall of the year. Is that right?
Yeah, we just nailed that one down, actually. The last class we had was our first class on canning. Annette Davis, who is just an avid homesteader, and her mom and grandmother canned, and she brought her experience to us. It was last Saturday, and it was just great for me as well. You know, my mom cans. She mainly does hot bath, though, so Annette was talking about pressure canning, which can be a little scary to some people, but since that class, that's completely left my frame of mind, actually. So.
And what do you can for your personal food stockpile?
You know what? Actually, I have not canned anything myself. I've been involved in canning tomatoes, which is about the easiest thing you can can, and some pickles, which are also pretty easy. But myself, personally, garden to can, I have not done yet. It's one of those things, it's just a time thing, so I'm looking forward to doing that again. This class kind of got me really excited about doing that, so I may give it a shot here in the next couple of months. I mainly put away dry food storage myself with all of the methods that you're probably aware of. I did find a pretty cool trick recently how to use a kitchen-grade food sealer, which usually takes those plastic bags with the dimples on one side, how to fool one of those into working on the Mylar bags, which are smooth on both lips of the bag, and they have problems sealing usually. But with that little trick, I figured out how to get some pretty good sucking on Mylar bags out of one of those. That's usually what I do.
We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Katie Armor offers affordable body armor, including level 3 trauma plates made of AR-500 steel. They can endure multiple rounds from pistols and rifles up to 7.62 NATO. Order today from katiearmor.com. That's CATIArmor.com.
Following a crippling EMP attack against the USA, college student-turned-survivalist Danny Walker finally makes it to his secure rural location. No sooner does Danny arrive than he is given another petrifying prophetic vision of the chaos still to come. The country has been brought to its knees, and the thin veneer of civility has been torn to shreds by the savagery lurking just below the surface. Danny has survived the EMP, but will he live through the most vicious era in U.S. history? By Ichabod, Book 2 of Seven Cows, Ugly and Gaunt. From Amazon.com today in Kindle, paperback, or audio edition.
We can a lot of meat because meat's one of those things that it's cheaper to buy the fresh meat and can it yourself and buying the jars and the lids and all of the stuff than it is to buy pre-canned meat, and you end up with a little better quality too. We'll can meatballs and chicken and pork and stuff like that. I did a video not too long ago actually where we canned some chicken, and I did it in a pressure canner on a hot plate being powered by my solar generator. So, you know, right. To just kind of a proof of concept for being able to can meat post-grid with a pressure canner and a solar generator, and it uses a lot of juice because that's a really long term process to get it up to temperature, and it's one of those things that I think if I were doing it in an actual post grid scenario, I'd probably have the solar cooker out first. I'd probably bring everything up to temperature first, put it in the canner already hot with hot water in it and food already hot in the jars, to cut down some of the time that you're actually sucking juice out of the solar generator, because that takes a whole lot of juice to run one of those hot plates for that long. Once it's up to temperature, it's just kind of clicking on and off, but, you know, you can have it on medium, but when it's on high, it's really, pulling a lot of power. And I think people they kind of underestimate what their appliances are going to be using on a solar generator. And it's good to try all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, you're talking about the ideas we all have and proof of concept and actually getting out there in their field and doing it. That's one of the things one of the biggest problems I see with people that are in a preparedness is they have all this stuff. I'm not naming names, but they, you know, I'm not sure they know how to use it. They've never tested it. You know, and I have those theories too. I mean, I think I got my basics down, but that's funny you mentioned that about the pressure canner off grid. I've thought about that a lot. Again, haven't made it out in the field to do the field test, but I was thinking gasification for that, because you get that nice steady flame, which you need to keep it, you know, at a current general stable temperature for long periods of time. Whereas, yeah, anytime you're drawing a current on a heating element from solar, you know, that's going to kill that pretty quick. And then of course fossil fuels, just like a wood fire, you're going to be, you know, the heat's going to be inconsistent. You're going to have a real hard time keeping that pressure canner, so you really need some kind of consistent flame, which to me, I was just immediately thought gasification. If you could set up a little 55 gallon drum, you know, and keep that, putting the gas out for a period of time and get that nice steady flame from wood gas.
That's a really great idea. If you do it, please make a video of it and shoot me the link, because that's something I'd love to put up.
Well, I'm gonna have to hold off on it for a little while. I'm in the project that I'm in the middle of now is turning the our 20-year-old kind of slightly junky RV into a mobile command center. So I just put the first base coat of paint on that after talking the wife into letting me go forward with that project. So I'm kind of wrapped up in that now. But yeah, that's, like I said, so many projects on the back burner, only so much time to do them in between.
Absolutely. On top of being a business owner. And now you also have airsoft classes. Do you sell airsoft guns at Omega?
We haven't gotten into selling any supplies for airsoft just yet. I mean, we do have some of the Enola Gay smoke grenades, which if you haven't seen those, they're very nice. And that's one of the things that I like to do for people, too, is we can kind of eat the shit. ORMD, hazardous material shipping, just kills you. I think the shipping's more than six of those smoke bombs are if you order them online. So that's one of the things we like to do. We can get a very reasonable price on those smoke grenades if you walk in the store to buy them. So other than that, though, I don't really have anything other than general tactical web gear type stuff that airsoft players like to use. But, you know, Voodoo Tactical, we have, you know, not their full line, but we have access to anything you need, special orders, which we like to do. But I'm loving that stuff. I don't know if you've had any experience with that, but I think that I like it better than Maxpedition personally. I like the nylon a lot better. I think it's every bit as good a quality. And again, I think I like the nylon better that they use. But so we have stuff like that for airsoft, but no guns just yet.
And do you think some preppers have a misconception of who the enemy is going to be in a post-grid scenario? Is it possible that there's some very well-trained people out there that may not have supplies, and their default plan may be to take your stuff?
Well, who was that one guy? I watched the first season of Doomsday Prepper, and then I quit cable, and I don't think I've seen any since then. But I heard some grumbling about somebody who was on there saying that that's their plan, is to take everybody else's stuff. And I've heard a couple of people say that. I almost threw a guy out of the shop one time for talking like that. I think those people are probably going to have a rude awakening if they ever try to do that, because that's kind of what people like us do. So they're probably planning for that scenario. But yeah, certainly I think there are probably people out there that are planning on doing that.
So is that why you think that airsoft could be a really good tool for preppers to get those skills and develop those skills and learn how to work as a team? I've talked to people that teach tactical classes, and they'll say that, you know, when they send a man untrained, if they send a man and a woman into a shoot house, 9 times out of 10 they'll end up shooting each other, and you know, in a obviously not with live ammo, but it's just kind of they end up getting caught in the crossfire if you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, no, that's completely the reason for airsoft in my mind. I think you got, and I'm not super involved in airsoft, so I'm kind of speaking out of turn here, but you know, I make my assessments like anybody. I think there's two kinds of airsoft people. There's the airsoft people that are all about airsoft and their actions are unrealistic from a tactical standpoint and a real life tactical standpoint, and then there are people that are into it just for that. So I think, yeah, for me and for people like us, probably taking the latter road could be very useful. Even a couple of guys I know, they have AR style airsoft guns, and when they put their mags in, they actually hit the bolt release, you know, slap it on the left hand side of the rifle, even though there's nothing there. Just to get in that habit, you know, when you reload that mag, you're going to slap the bolt release on a mag change. So, yeah, totally. You know, there's only a handful of people that I trust behind me with an actual loaded firearm. So airsoft, in my mind, is completely amenable to safe, real-world, you know, as close as you can get, of course, without being real tactical-type training, sure.
And when we're talking about tactical preparedness, we also have to think about medical preparedness, because obviously bullets go in both directions, right?
Yeah, and I think that and medical and hygiene are probably, I don't know, people are on medical, but I think that kind of requires a lot of training, or not a lot, but at least a little bit of real world type training. You know, just being able to deal with the mental aspect of having to care for a severe wound, but then also having the specialized equipment like tourniquets and, you know, battle dressings and stuff like that. And again, being able to deal with it mentally. But hygiene is the other thing that I think people neglect probably more than medical. You ever heard of that guy named Selko?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, he's from Europe. He had lived through some collapse.
Right, the Bosnia-Herzegovina conflict in the early 90s. He wasn't a combatant, but he kind of got stuck. I don't remember which city it was, but he was stuck in one of the cities that was under siege for like a year and a half. And his recordings are kind of interesting. I went ahead and donated to him to check those out. I think it's like 7 or 8 hours of audio recordings, and they're pretty interesting. But I think that's probably the one thing that I gleaned from his experience is the hygiene thing, just how people would get sores from not, and it kind of overlaps really hygiene and medical, that they'd get sores from not washing their clothes for a month, you know, or, you know, not having proper hand cleaning habits. when they're coming back from the bathroom or whatever. And then, of course, the lack of medical supplies to deal with that once it happens, they kind of play off of each other.
Yeah, I guess for hygiene, an ounce of prevention is certainly worth a pound of cure, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've thought about that a lot, too. You know, in Scouts, when you would have a wood cutting area, you were supposed to set up a, you know, were you a scout?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you remember you had to, you're supposed to set up the little rope line, right? And you're so many feet back from where the person's actually chopping, and you had to announce whether you're coming in or out of the wood chopping area. And that seems like Safety Sally stuff, kind of to a degree. And I got to admit, at home, I don't have my wood cutting area roped off. But, you know, and I've thought about this, if you're talking some kind of, you know, Mad Max type scenario where medical attention is not going to be right at hand, that kind of Safety Sally stuff is going to become the norm if I'm around. We're going to put those ropes up and, like you said, an ounce of prevention. Let's get Safety Sally on it, because I'd much rather be that way than having to deal with something.
And then back to medical, besides a basic first aid kit that we can get at Walmart, what else do you think a good medical kit should contain?
Well, number one, the kits from Walmart and places, those are fine. They're a good, I often tell people that. I mean, we don't really carry those here because you can get them any place. I do have a couple, but you can get some pretty good starts that way and ideas of what you need to expand on. But what I would say about that is saying you need to, you know, triple, if not deco, whatever, 10 times the amount of whatever's in there. This is, you know, go find it separately and add to that, because, you know, 99 times out of 100, you're going to need a Band-Aid and some antibiotic ointment and just a way to clean that cut up. So you're going to run through Band-Aids like crazy. And you need to get high-quality Band-Aids, too, like the cloth, stretchy type with good adhesion. But I way overstock on those and antibiotic ointment, because those are the things you're going to need the most, and you're going to run out of them. So then most of the store-bought kits, you know, they don't have anything like tourniquets or big combat gauze and things like this. And, of course, they're lacking in a lot of them. A lot of them don't even have sting relief, or there's sunscreen that probably needs to be in a good medical kit. There's lots of things. Rehydration salts that your over-the-counter medical kit is not going to have. So you definitely need to add them. You can't just, you know, go to Walmart and buy a first aid kit and think you're okay. You need to, you know, totally duplicate or more everything that's in it to the 10th degree, just so you have supply, and then you need to expand it too into the more specialized things.
And we're both going to be at the Cincinnati Preparedness Expo on October 15th and 16th. What products are you going to be offering at the expo?
Oh, yeah, I can't wait for that. Last year, Oliver North was there. He came by our booth. I didn't see the guy, but he shook one of our employees' hands, so I was a little jealous about that. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to that, too. We'll have a little bit of everything. It's kind of a smorgasbord. I don't really concentrate on one or two products. We kind of, you know, that's what I like about our store, is that we have stuff that you don't see in any other retail store, and it's kind of all here in one place. Some other people that kind of advertise as prepper stores, you go in and it's really a gun store with like a wall of, you know, a small wall of overpriced medical supplies or something. So we've got just all kinds of stuff, and you'll never get the idea of what we have in the shop on the website, because I'm not going to give my business model away, number one. But like I said, we want to deal with people, you know, in person, and talk to them and let them see the stuff and just kind of try to focus their dollars for them in the most efficient way possible to get what they need.
And what's the one product that you think most preppers are missing in their supplies and not getting from other stores that you're hoping they'll pick up when they come by your booth?
Well, they're not going to pick it up by the booth. I would answer that question, like you said, with skills and knowledge. That's what people need. But actual tools, I don't know. If I had to grab one thing and run out of here, I'd probably grab a Kelly kettle. Do you know what those are?
No, tell us about it.
Okay, a Kelly kettle has been used in Ireland for like over 100 years, I believe, where all the fishermen there on the lakes would always have one of these things going on the, you know, on the lake shore, and it's kind of a communal thing there. They see one of those going, the guys would pull their little boats over and share tea. So it is a kettle. It holds 2 cups of water, but it's got a hollow center So in essence, it's really a rocket stove, because the three elements of a rocket stove, of course, being like a limited air intake, a chimney, and then insulation. So the water acts as insulation, and the flame shoots right up through the center of this kettle. We only carry the stainless steel version just because I don't think aluminum's healthy for you, plus the stainless steel is far more durable. But so basically a Kelly kettle, if you can make fire, which you should be able to, and you have fuel, which we shouldn't be running out of sticks anytime soon or something to burn, you can boil 2 cups of water in about 3 minutes. And yes, it is really that fast. So my goodbye bag, my inch bag, if you will, even though it's bulky, and I get crap from that about people, it all goes in that bag, because as long as I can make fire, I can make potable water, I can cook on it. They have a little attachment you can put on the top of it that allows you to set a pan on there so you can be cooking something else while you're boiling the water. That's probably the thing I'd grab.
Very cool. Well, thanks for making time for us, and I'm looking forward to meeting you in Cincinnati.
Yes, likewise, Mark. Again, thanks for the opportunity, man, and I'll see you there.
Get prepared before disaster strikes. PrepperRecon.com offers MOLLE-compatible individual first aid kits for your home, auto, or bug-out bag. These kits have everything you need to address a traumatic injury, including an Israeli battle dressing, quick clot, EMT shears, suture kit, Steri-Strips, tourniquet, tough strip bandages, and so much more. Kits are available in OD Green, Coyote, Black, and ACU. $99 includes shipping. Go to PrepperRecon.com and click the Store tab at the top of the homepage. Order today before it's too late.